This is a Public News Service Daily Newscast update. I'm Mike Clifford. Elijah Cummings has died. The Washington Post reporting the Democratic congressman from Maryland, who gained national attention for his principled stands on politically charged issues in the House, his calming effect on the anti-police riots in Baltimore, and his forceful opposition to the presidency of Donald Trump, died early this morning. He was 68. President Trump tried Wednesday to distance himself from the escalating chaos in northern Syria, that following the decision to withdraw U.S. troops from the region, also for the Washington Post. They quote Trump as saying that Turkey and the Kurds are fighting over land that has nothing to do with us.
A pending U.S. Supreme Court ruling could impact a South Dakota case that shocked the Sioux Falls community. This month, the High Court justices heard arguments in Collar versus Kansas. It's a case that could determine the constitutionality of the so-called insanity defense, which Kansas abolished in the year 1995. Criminal law professor Aya Gruber says the Supreme Court has so far relied on a doctrine known as shock to the conscience as grounds for a death sentence.
Is it possible that a state can go ahead and punish a severely mentally ill person the same way that they would punish a completely sane person? Or would that be such a grossly disproportionate punishment that it would shock the conscience?
One Sioux Falls man eligible for the death penalty awaits trial. In 2016, 24-year-old Heath Otto was charged with killing his mother and nephew and two counts of first-degree murder that make him eligible for the death penalty. His defense lawyers later hired experts who diagnosed Otto with schizophrenia and schizoaffective disorder. And Minnesota voters will head to the polls on Tuesday, November the 5th. They'll be there to decide a host of municipal races and referendums. Even though the presidential election is still a year away, state officials say that ballot security is still a high priority this fall. Mike Moen reports.
Minnesota Secretary of State Steve Simon says anyone who wants to disrupt the democratic process could use local races to spread false information. He says hackers and other groups won't be taking this November off.
The intelligence authorities tell us, meaning all the secretaries of state and elections administrators, to be on the lookout for that. And as you'd suspect with any election, the stakes become higher and the likelihood of falsehoods become higher.
Simon adds it isn't only foreign adversaries posting false information in an effort to sway elections. He says there are plenty of fringe groups in the U.S. who post fake ads and articles. Officials say voters can detect phony political information by looking for photos that have been altered or online links that mischaracterize what a news story actually says.
Looking ahead, Simon says the state will use some funding provided by Congress to bolster election infrastructure ahead of the March primary. This is PNS. Now to the state of Tennessee, where Governor Bill Lee has yet to respond to medical professionals who are calling for a statewide emergency ban on flavored vaping products.
President of the Tennessee Medical Association, Dr. Elise Denaney, says this month her colleagues have sent a letter urging the governor to join at least five other states that have already restricted or banned the sale or marketing of flavored vaping products.
The younger consumers, including adolescents, seem to be drawn to the flavored products. The medical community is advocating for just a temporary ban, just so we have time to try to figure out some of this data.
49 cases of serious lung injury among Tennesseans who have used electronic cigarettes or other vaping devices have been reported so far, according to the State Department of Health. I'm Nadia Ramlagan.
The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention named the mysterious illness E-Valley. It stands for e-cigarette vaping product use and associated lung injury. State leaders soon will have a better grasp on the magnitude of Missouri's backlog of untested sexual assault kits.
With funding from a $2.8 million federal grant, the Missouri Attorney General's Safe Kit Initiative is expected to complete its inventory of untested rape kits in the next couple of weeks. Matthew Huffman with the Missouri Coalition Against Domestic and Sexual Violence explains the effort stems from the joint work of victim advocates, law enforcement, and forensic experts. He says they discovered a lack of structure in terms of policies and procedures for these kits.
One really specific example of that is when we first pulled the group together, we realized that not every hospital was using rape kits in the same way. And sometimes they weren't even using the same kit. There wasn't a consistent process across the board in our state.
A 2018 audit found roughly 5,400 untested kits in the state. The current count will come from directly contacting all hospitals and law enforcement agencies. Mary Sherman reporting.
And finally, Eric Tegadoff explains the Puget Sound region is striking out on its own with a bold proposal for a clean fuel standard.
The Puget Sound Clean Air Agency has drafted a rule that aims to reduce greenhouse gas emissions from transportation by 26% by 2030 in King, Kitsap, Pierce, and Snohomish counties. Transportation accounts for more than 40% of the state's carbon emissions. The petroleum industry predicts it would lead to higher fuel costs, but Eleanor Bastian with the Washington Environmental Council says the agency's analysis shows it would save people money by lowering fuel costs per mile.
Which we think is a better way to think about those costs than the price at the pump.
After all the public comments are collected, the agency will consider a final rule no sooner than late February. I'm Mike Clifford for Public News Service. We are member and listener supported, and you'll find us online at publicnewsservice.org.